It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Trump in Kenosha. Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. Yeah, the president is going there tomorrow. Kenosha, Wisconsin, the scene of this country's latest controversial police shooting. Mr. Trump is there to talk to local officials about the racial unrest.
The president is going there because he cares about every single American in this country. He wants to make that known.
But the mayor of Kenosha says thanks, but no thanks. He says the president's visit could actually cause more harm than good.
Presidents are always welcome in the community, but the timing, I think, is not really a very good time.
At issue, Jacob Blake Jr. shot 7 times in the back in Kenosha earlier this month. Kenosha cops say Blake had a knife and resisted arrest. President Trump and the mayor of Portland, Oregon are blaming each other for the deadly violence that rocked that city over the weekend. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler.
Mr. President, it's you who have created the hate and the division.
Mr. Trump pushed back, tweeting today that people of Portland want law and order, and the radical left cannot deliver. Shots rang out Saturday night after a confrontation between Trump supporters and Black Lives Matter demonstrators. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
It is in Democrat cities. You know, you want to talk about Donald Trump's America. Most of Donald Trump's America is peaceful.
The Department of Homeland Security says if Portland's mayor wants federal help to stem the violence, all he needs to do is ask.
It works if they would take the president's formula in Oregon, but the reason they won't is simply because the president wants them to do it. That's the only reason they're doing this, and it's terrible, it's pathetic, and it's horrible leadership.
Acting DHS Deputy Secretary Ken Cuccinelli. 10 times in our nation's capital.
If we don't get no justice!
Overnight, police fired tear gas and smoke bombs to break up protests. The demonstrators lit fireworks and shined lights in the windows while people slept during their march through residential neighborhoods. A St. Louis police officer shot in the head after responding to a call has died from those injuries. 29-year-old Tamara Bohannon was with the department for 3.5 years. He is the first cop killed in the line of duty in St. Louis in nearly a decade. Tamaris Bohannon leaves behind a wife and 3 children. Joe Biden in the southwestern part of Pennsylvania today for his first major campaign speech since the convention. DiMuccio has a preview.
He's set to speak in Pittsburgh later today. The topic at hand will be asking voters if they feel safe in Donald Trump's America. Biden will highlight the coronavirus crisis as well as the unrest across the country.
Biden said a week ago he could win the election from his basement. DNC spokeswoman Kate Bedingfield interviewed yesterday by Chris Wallace of Fox News.
He said a week ago that he could win the election from home. Now he's going to go on a big campaign trip.
That's just disingenuous, Chris. We can hold socially distant, responsible events. You're going to see him travel. You're going to see him in battleground states.
And first up is Pennsylvania for Joe Biden. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says Biden is weak on the law and order front, and the American people know it.
There's an opportunity here for the president to make Joe Biden go out and speak. And believe me, if that's what he's going to do over the next 65 days, this race is going to get closer every day.
The Hill media reporter Joe Concha wonders if Biden will take any questions from the media following his big speech in Pittsburgh.
Joe Biden has done 2 press conferences in 150 days. You juxtapose this with President Trump or Kayleigh McEnany, who do 2 press conferences a day on most days.
Recent polls show Biden with a narrow lead over the president in all important Pennsylvania. The president will be there Thursday. FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn says he is open to approving a COVID-19 vaccine before phase 3 trials are complete. His predecessors, Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
I think the full approval approval for the general population where people can go to CVS and get a shot. That's really a 2021 event. Maybe the first quarter of 2021, probably more likely the first half.
A new CDC report shows 94% of people who've died of COVID-19 had underlying health conditions like diabetes or heart disease. In just 6% of cases, was COVID the leading cause for death? The CDC looked at COVID death certificates from February 1st through August 1st of this year to come up with those findings. The governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, says 17 people have died as a result of Hurricane Laura last week. 300,000 homes and businesses still in the dark. Most of the damage in hard-hit Lake Charles.
You just look around and the things that are important to your children and that are important to you are just in shambles, and there's water everywhere, and you think to yourself, how is this reality?
This is how life is now for the foreseeable future. I mean, it's going to be bad. No water, no gas, no sewer, nothing.
I knew there'd be a considerable amount of damage, a devastation. It's probably more than I ever anticipated.
The storm caused $20 billion in damage. You can find out how you can help by visiting fln.org/help. The first commercial flight from Israel to the United Arab Emirates took off today. President Trump's son-in-law, Mideast advisor Jared Kushner, was on that flight from Tel Aviv to Abu Dhabi. It comes after the White House announced an historic peace deal between Israel and the UAE.
If you show you're tough in a neighborhood that's very tough, suddenly things become possible that were impossible under the appeasement process that had dominated both parties.
That's former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, and he thinks the president deserves credit for moving the ball forward when it comes to Mideast peace.
I think you're going to see two or three more countries recognize Israel, maybe even before the end of this year. It's a great achievement. You've just changed the whole region.
The UAE is the first Arab state in the Persian Gulf to make peace with Israel. Breaking news from college basketball. Former Georgetown University coach John Thompson, dead at the age of 78. Here's correspondent Steve Kathan.
John Thompson seemed larger than life. He was 6'10 and towered over many of his own players. At Georgetown, he revived a dormant program and brought it to the top.
Georgetown, that's the ball game. National champion.
Winning the 1984 national championship, the first African American coach to do that. With a towel over his shoulder, he prowled the sidelines, and off the court, he was a powerful voice on race relations.
And we'll have much more on the death of John Thompson coming up in sports with Sonny Dalfiette. Also ahead this Monday afternoon, Oneonta goes online only. Divorce rates during the pandemic and a fall foliage forecast. But first, Kevin Williams' forecast. This is Family Life.
Well, good afternoon. The week certainly started on a nice note weather-wise for most, but there are some changes ahead. I'll be back with forecast details coming up in about 10 minutes.
All right, we will see you then. Thanks, Kevin. Here's what's going on where you live across New York and Pennsylvania. SUNY Oneonta in upstate New York is closing its campus for 2 weeks. COVID outbreaks caused by multiple student-led parties. The reason why, SUNY Chancellor Jim Molitroz.
As we see here at Oneonta today, one or two parties can grow where one or two cases become dozens and dozens of cases.
Oneonta is the first college in New York to close due to COVID. More than 100 students have tested positive for the virus.
Tell me why SUNY Oneonta has 105 cases, didn't tell us, and we had to find out on the news.
Those on campus that we heard from say it is frustrating this to start the semester this way. It only began, the classes did, just a week ago.
There are a large number of students who take this seriously, and there's a few that don't, and unfortunately they're kind of jeopardizing the whole thing for us.
It's college kids, and you can't expect that every single college kid is going to follow every single rule that you put out there.
The State Health Department SWAT team arrives Sunday at SUNY Oneonta. It will be conducting rapid testing and contact tracing. 5 students have been suspended for hosting large parties on campus. Today marked the first day back to school for many districts in the Northern Tier. Schools welcoming back students in Susquehanna, Lackawanna, and Bradford counties. Dr. James Kravick with Mercy Health says the first few days will be challenging.
For the younger kids, it will be difficult. Teachers will be constantly reminding the kids about masks. I think that's inevitable. You know, as they get older, I think it's a little bit easier. But I do believe just setting expectations for the kids from the very beginning, but it has to start at home.
The number of school teachers in New York who are filing for retirement is on the rise as schools plan to welcome back students next week. There's been a 20% increase in retirement applications, according to the New York State Teacher Retirement System. The Scranton, Pennsylvania School District has recommended furloughing more than 130 employees, including many teachers. Students are learning virtually at Scranton until at least November. The Electric City School Board will be voting on those furloughs tonight. Divorce rates across the country soaring during the pandemic. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
Divorce rates have increased by 34% during the COVID-19 pandemic, with marriages crumbling 3 weeks into quarantine and newlywed separations doubling to 20%. Experts attribute the high divorce rate to a combination of pandemic-related stress, including unemployment, mental illness, and child care needs. Interest in divorce spiked on April 13th, which is approximately 3 weeks after most states implemented lockdown orders. Southern states in the Bible Belt recorded the highest number of divorces. Newlyweds married under 5 months were hit the hardest. The rate of divorce decreased the longer a couple was married. Brennan Dixon, Family Life News.
Couples forced to cancel their big day due to the coronavirus could soon have another opportunity to host a wedding in the Empire State. More than 1,000 wedding businesses across New York have signed on to a class action lawsuit against the governor and attorney general.
We brought that case on behalf of all banquet facilities, restaurants, caterers, anybody in the food and beverage industry who wants to host weddings, saying that, look, if we can have people in our restaurant up to 50% of our occupancy limit, we should be allowed to have those people there for purposes of celebrating a wedding.
Attorney Anthony Rupp says it's only fair that wedding venues are given the same opportunities as restaurants, for instance.
They just cannot understand how the restaurant next door can have 175 people every night, and they try to hold a wedding of 120, and they're told they can't.
He says aside from abiding by the 50% occupancy limit, wedding venues would have no problem enforcing the mask mandate. A new poll from the Associated Press shows 45% of Americans are saving more during the pandemic, this despite over 14 million job losses. Ed Hutton is a financial analyst in Western New York.
They recognize that it's important to have savings. The one thing that I think a lot of people really haven't taken advantage of is borrowing money right now because of the low interest rate.
The AP poll shows 26% of American workers are paying down debt faster than they were before coronavirus. Two-thirds are spending less than usual. One-quarter of all those polled said they've been unable to pay some bills on time because of the pandemic. Blind voters in Pennsylvania will be able to use a federally approved cloud-based electronic platform to vote remotely in the November election. This new omni-ballot technology, as it's called, comes in response to a state court ruling that said the current system violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. According to the National Federation of the Blind for Pennsylvania, there are about 150,000 people in the Commonwealth with some form of visual impairment. The Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce will be hosting a drive-through job fair this Thursday, September 3rd. More than 150 jobs available. Interviews will be conducted from a safe distance while prospective employees remain in their vehicles. It's open to the public. Masks are required. That job fair is from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. on State Street in Rochester this Thursday. A Penn State forest expert says the fall foliage could be disappointing in parts of Pennsylvania this autumn. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Mark Abrams, professor of forest ecology and physiology, says it's hard to be optimistic for great fall coloration in the areas now under extreme drought because it has persisted for so long. However, Abrams says there is a random element to fall colors that even scientists don't fully understand. Sometimes we get a great display even though climate conditions are less than ideal. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Sports next, the two-minute drill. Here's Sonny Delfiet.
Yeah, Bob, big news in college basketball. Legendary Georgetown coach John Thompson Jr., simply known as Big John throughout college basketball, has died at the age of 78. Thompson became the first black coach to lead a team to a national championship, major national championship, back in 1984 when the Hoyas won it all. Of course, they made it to three Final Fours in the 80s, winning the Big East title seven times. Jim Boeheim from Syracuse.
You know, North Carolina Duke is what everybody talks about in basketball, and I think it is the greatest rivalry over a long period of time. But for about 10 years, Syracuse-Georgetown was nothing quite like it.
Four of Thompson's players are now in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo, and Allen Iverson, 75 of 77 Hoya players who remained at Georgetown for 4 years, have their degrees. Thompson, inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 1999, survived by his sons John Thompson III, Ronnie Thompson, and daughter Tiffany Thompson. On the ice, Islanders, Golden Knights, and Stars are now one win away from reaching the conference semifinals. After all three teams posted Game 4 wins, New York put the East top seed Philadelphia on the brink of elimination with a 3-2 win. Barry Trotz.
When the game was on the line, our group found a way to get it done.
Vegas down the Canucks 5-3 to take a 3-1 series lead. Dallas scored three times in the span of less than 4.5 minutes to hold off and beat the Avalanche 5-4. The Nuggets have forced Game 7 of their first-round series with the Jazz with a 119-107 win behind another 50-point performance from Jamal Murray. The Celtics jumped all over the Raptors early, held on for a 112-94 win in Game 1 of their series. The Clippers have moved to the West second round after eliminating the Mavericks 111-97. And a thrilling finish at the BMW Championship. John Rahm from 66 feet away sinks that birdie and beats Dustin Johnson in the first hole of a playoff. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfiet.
What a shot. Thank you very much, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, Trump in Kenosha, Biden in the Berg, and issues in education. Dr. Ralph Kerr with the Teaching and Learning Institute after this.
What if every single Christian could defend life using arguments that are clear and compassionate? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Last Wednesday, during a new segment on the Breakpoint podcast in which Shane Morris and myself field questions from listeners, we tackled the following question. If abortion is so evil, why does God abort millions of fertilized eggs every day? With you folks, almost everything's black and white, no nuance. If a fetus has deformities to prevent it from living a few hours after birth, why put the mother through this trauma? Well, questions like this, especially in light of our incredibly strategic cultural moment when it comes to defending innocent preborn life, is why we called an audible for our next Colson Center short course. Four Tuesday nights in a row, starting September 8th, you can be trained to be a pro-life advocate by the best. The course is called Champion Life, How to Oppose Abortion and Defend the Unborn. In fact, the very first week of class will enable you to navigate conversations that we so often find ourselves in, not dissimilar to what Shane and I heard from our listener, a flurry of questions mixed with an accusation or two. You have to start by defining exactly what abortion is. Medical science, embryology, and technologies like ultrasound have settled beyond a doubt that abortion takes a human life. Neither a male sperm cell nor a female egg cell are human beings, but once they unite, there's a different kind of entity, a distinct human life. From this starting point, we can tackle our listeners' very first question. Why is abortion wrong when embryos naturally die by miscarriage every day? Well, the answer is found by applying the same rules to these preborn humans as we would to humans outside the womb. Millions of people die every day. So why would we be against murder? Of course, the difference between millions of people dying every day by natural causes and those who die by murder is intent. It's wrong to take an innocent human life. Any innocent human life. Fertilized eggs, embryos, fetuses, newborns, teenagers, and adults are all human beings. Assuming that different rules apply as long as the human is in utero is a category mistake. On the same foundation, we can address the question of fetuses with life-threatening diseases or deformities. Suppose grandpa is found to have a terminal illness and will die in a few weeks. He's suffering. His medical expenses will place enormous financial burdens on the family. Should we kill him? Should we, as in the case of abortion, kill him without his consent? Of course not. Why? Well, because it's always wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. We shouldn't be stumped by these kind of questions. We must know how to define terms, how to ask the right questions back, and how to identify category errors. That's why this upcoming short course is so very important. Every single Christian needs to be prepared to oppose abortion and defend the preborn. Even if Roe v. Wade were overturned at the Supreme Court, the legal battle for life would then shift to the states. And so, I repeat, every single Christian needs to be equipped to oppose abortion and defend the unborn. So please sign up for this Champion Life short course at breakpoint.org. That's breakpoint.org. Again, it starts Tuesday, September the 8th, and carries on each of the next four Tuesday nights. If you have to miss a particular week, we record each and every session so you won't miss a thing. Week one will teach you how to defend life in 1 minute or less. Week two will talk about the wrong ways we talk about abortion. Week three will equip you to answer the common pro-abortion arguments. And week four will enable you to launch a plan to join the pro-life movement immediately. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We are coming up on 20 past the hour. Work week weather next.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Sunshine and some scattered clouds in New York. Sunshine fading through cloud cover in Pennsylvania. And there may be a shower in some spots near and south of I-80. In fact, the high temperatures ranging 70s and low 80s. For tonight and tomorrow, a fair amount of cloudiness. Dry much of the time in New York, but there'll be a couple of showers tomorrow. Showers will become a little more numerous in Pennsylvania. Low tonight, 60s. The high tomorrow, mid-70s to low 80s. Wednesday, rather cloudy with showers and a rumble or two of thunder, mid-70s to the middle 80s.
Hi, Kevin Williams, the Weather Authority. Thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm Bob Price, and here's what's happening this Monday afternoon, the 31st of August, the last day of the month. A startling new survey from the Centers for Disease Control shows 94% of Americans who die from COVID-19 had underlying health conditions. 94%. In just 6% of cases, was COVID the leading cause of death? The CDC looked at COVID death certificates from February 1st through August 1st in coming up with those findings. President Trump and Joe Biden heading out to swing states this week amid ongoing protests and continued COVID outbreaks.
North Carolina will get another visit from President Trump this week. Kenosha, Wisconsin, against the wishes of its elected officials, will also get a visit from the president. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is expected to make his way out to one of several swing states to campaign before the November election, opting against touching down in Wisconsin or Oregon amid protest, and instead will head to Pennsylvania. All of this is happening while the U.S. has surpassed two major numbers regarding COVID, 180,000 deaths and over 6 million COVID infections. Nearly half of the top 20 metropolitan areas where new cases per capita rose the most over the past 2 weeks are college towns, home to the reopened campuses of large public universities.
Mike Bauer reporting. We get more on Biden's political pit stop in Pennsylvania today from political analyst Ed O'Keefe.
He's headed to Pittsburgh later today, where aides say he's going to speak broadly about the president's response to the violence, the pandemic, and the economic downturn. The general gist of the message, quote, are you safe in Donald Trump's America?
The president will be in Pennsylvania on Thursday. The president and the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, trading barbs following a deadly shooting there this past weekend.
The shooting happened after a pro-Trump caravan with hundreds of vehicles drove through downtown.
Don't let this be the spark that sets off an acceleration of hostilities in our beautiful city.
While the mayor was speaking, President Trump tweeted the only way to stop violence is through strength. Wheeler said he'll work with local officials to end violent demonstrations.
I'd appreciate that either the president support us or he stay out of the way.
Police are investigating what led to the shooting. There has not been an arrest. Brad Ford, Portland, Oregon.
Now to Lake Charles, Louisiana, where correspondent Omar Villafranca is covering the devastating aftermath of Hurricane Laura.
Hurricane Laura's 150-mile-per-hour winds knocked down thousands of utility poles. People here are now facing 90-degree temperatures and high humidity with no electricity or running water.
It's terrible. It's catastrophic.
17 deaths so far blamed on Laura. 300,000 people have no power. An historic flight today in the Holy Land. Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
U.S. and Israeli delegations flew together on the first commercial flight between Tel Aviv and the United Arab Emirates. White House envoy Jared Kushner was on board.
The Abraham Accords is a giant step forward. We celebrate a historic breakthrough for peace.
The word peace was inscribed above the cockpit in English, Hebrew, and Arabic.
The UAE is the first Arab state in the Persian Gulf to make peace with Israel. A new tool helping parents of school-age children make academic decisions in the age of coronavirus. Wendy Gillette has the story.
A recent survey by the women's and family healthcare site Maven found 60% of parents didn't have a plan for their kids for the fall as late as the end of July. CEO Kate Ryder.
We thought it would be a good idea to help parents with a framework.
So the site designed the COVID-19 child care decision tool, taking parents through a questionnaire to help them come to the conclusion if in-home or out-of-home instruction or care is best for their family. The site worked with economist Emily Oster to help add features like the gut check once you've answered the questions.
Your answers to these questions suggest that this is what might work for you. How do you feel about that?
The tool is free.
Wendy Gillette reporting. It's 25 past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the many issues impacting our public schools with the good Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Ralph, welcome back to the program, sir. Great to have you today.
Thank you
very much. We'll try to do this in 5 minutes or less, but a lot of COVID questions out there today. We'll start with the governor of New York and his recent announcement on COVID clusters at college. If a school gets 100 cases or 5% of the total enrollment, that school has to shut down, go online for 2 weeks. Is that a fair deal, you think, Ralph?
Well, I think it really depends on the college's circumstances. I mean, some colleges are quarantining the students when they first come in. And I know that one college nearby, I won't say its name, although I'm coming from Houghton.
Sure.
They've got between 60 and 70 students in quarantine right now just because of they came from out of state. So they basically got sort of a dress rehearsal for any problem that might develop. I think the 50 may be a little bit low given that, but I think it is good to have some guidelines because otherwise we're going to be all over the lot.
Yeah.
On when do you close?
Yeah, and nobody wants a second wave. God forbid
not.
We have to shut everything down. Well, NYSA, yes. The New York State United Teachers, making a pitch for mandatory mask wearing last week, all day long during the school day. No exceptions, not for gym class, not at your desk. Put it on, keep it on. How are districts going to receive that, Ralph?
Well, I'm really concerned about the involvement of the union in the whole reopening thing. I think if they really had their druthers, they'd just keep school closed. You know, this is the latest salvo in that regard. They weren't successful in keeping schools totally closed. So now they're saying, well, let's just wear a mask basically 24/7 while you're in school. By the same token, I know that individual teachers are not supportive of that. I think it's just another aspect of really wanting to make things so difficult that schools would be inclined to just close and stay closed.
Yeah, and so schools will open next week in New York after Labor Day. In Pennsylvania, they've already begun operations. How has the rollout gone so far, Ralph? I know the outgoing education secretary, Pedro Rivera, said he's going to let the districts decide at the local level what the closing protocols will be. Do you support that move?
I really do. I think that it is a local decision. In large states like Pennsylvania, circumstances are very different, say, from the eastern part of the state to the west and in more rural areas. I think it's a great idea to let the local school districts make those decisions, and I'm hoping and praying that as they open up this week that things will go well for the students and for the faculty and staff that are involved in trying to educate the children.
Yeah, and can't get away from the sports controversy either. It's such a part of the high school experience. I know that those who do band are saying, stop it already. Stop talking about this. But it's huge because it affects so many students, Ralph. The New York Council of School Superintendents making some recommendations last week regarding high school sports. What was that all about?
Well, what they really did was to recommend to the governor that he come out with another mandate that says no high school sports until January of 2021. And their solution is that then all sports would run in the spring. The problem with that, though, is particularly in smaller schools, many students participate in every sports season.
Yeah.
You know, soccer in the fall and other things in the winter, other things in the spring. And that won't work if you have all seasons going in the spring. So it's going to be really difficult to do that.
And then finally, let's talk about busing issues. There, we've already talked about the driver shortage issue, the ability of public schools to transport kids that attend private or parochial schools. I know that's a big deal in Buffalo now. Talk about the transportation issues facing districts in New York State, which are about to open next week.
Well, as we said before, the shortage of bus drivers is real. There's going to be a shortage of actual buses when you do the social distancing. But on the question of private or parochial schools, the districts don't have any choice but to transport those students. It's in law, so they're just going to have to figure out a way to make it happen. And it just adds to all of the issues that schools are dealing with as they open up.
All right. So it's about as clear as mud. But if you have questions, make sure Ralph wants to hear from you. Ralph, you have a wonderful website. Where can folks go?
Thank you. It's simply yrun.org, yrun.org.
Issues, so little time. It's Issues in Education Mondays during the Noon Report or online anytime. Download the podcast at fln.org/podcast. Just click on the news icon.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. After a lovely start to the week in most areas, we'll have an increase in humidity coinciding with the approach of a front, and that's going to mean some showers as we head into tomorrow and particularly tomorrow night and Wednesday. In the meantime, for this afternoon, sunshine and some scattered clouds in New York, sunshine fading through cloud cover in Pennsylvania, and there may be a shower in some spots near and south of I-80. In fact, the high temperatures ranging 70s and low 80s. For tonight and tomorrow, a fair amount of cloudiness, dry much of the time in New York, but there'll be a couple of showers tomorrow. Showers will become a little more numerous in Pennsylvania. Low tonight, 60s, the high tomorrow, mid-70s to low 80s. Wednesday, rather cloudy with showers and a rumble or two of thunder, mid-70s to the middle 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally at noon, meet the world's oldest married couple. Not longest, oldest. They're from Ecuador, and they've been married 79 years. That's still pretty long, but what's most impressive here is their age. Julio Mora Tapayo is 110 years old. His wife, Waldramina, is 104 years old. Both are retired school teachers from Quito. Their combined age is just short of 215 years. They were officially recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records this month, the world's oldest married couple. Together, they have 4 children, 11 grandchildren, 21 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. How about that? That's the world we live in, the last day of August, 2020. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.